Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, we were just singing.
We were. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
You grabbed your ukulele off the wall.
Hey, preview. We are in a future episode. The ukulele will make an appearance, a spontaneous appearance in a future episode that we've got coming up with Lee Camp. That's not today's episode.
No, it's like a musical Easter egg to listen for.
For today, we'll just sing. I don't know if you guys can hear this. We can just sing our theme song, Matt, if you'll sing with me.
Sure. We're committed. Yeah, you got it, buddy. Woo!
Oh, what's the next chord though? It's probably that minor.
It's more of a sustain.
I actually don't know how it goes.
Right.
Anyway, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, everybody.
There's somebody out there with perfect pitch or tone approximation.
Yeah, I have no idea if that's the right key.
And they
probably
can
not
name them all. Today we have Dr. Heather Dave Duke Gingrich on. She is a trauma expert, and I wanted to have her on because this is something that's brand new, basically, in the last 20 years. I mean, it's not new in the sense of human experience. We've been experiencing like trauma and generational trauma forever, but we're just now naming it. And as
you're learning what it does to our bodies.
Yeah. And as pastors, we're learning, I can't pray the trauma away sometimes. Like sometimes I need extra help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Specifically, like, because of what it does to our bodies.
Yeah.
It makes us unable to get into a space bodily where we could actually be open to prayer, healing, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so
it's an interesting,
it's
an interesting conundrum. I mean, interesting in the sense of like, it presents us with new categories that I think, I know, you know, 15 years ago, I wasn't really thinking like this. In terms of my, like when I was discipling people or counseling with people or, so this is, it is very new in the last few years.
Right. And so now we have a whole new world of trauma and how we help identify trauma with people who are in our churches and help them find resources, help care for them. And as a pastor, like one of the things, the gifts of wisdom, which comes through failure is knowing what you're not equipped to do is just as important as knowing what you are equipped to do.
Yeah.
And so all that to say, I think that this interview is important. Her book is helpful and we want to get right to it unless we have some things to announce.
I don't think that we do. We've got some upcoming, an upcoming podcast series that we're going to be starting here in a couple of weeks on, how to be a Christian in America. It's becoming harder and harder.
Yeah. And you know, if you listen outside of America, this could still be helpful for you to understand the peculiar, weirdness.
If you look at America and you're like, what in the world
is going on?
So anyway, but that's about it, I think. So I think we can head right into this interview with Heather Dave Duke Gingrich talking about trauma, discipleship. And I like what you said, Matt, that it's not like, oh, hey, here's some information about trauma so you can like disciple people.
We're going to get you up to speed. And
yeah, so now you're an expert. You're a trauma expert. No, that's not it. It's this whole new world is basically allowing us as pastors and as disciple makers to know when it's time to, you know, as part of someone's discipleship, like mm-hmm. maybe it's like time to do some EMDR, maybe go see a trauma expert, you know, like a lot of these new therapies and all that kind of stuff that we can work in partnership with therapists and people who really know what they're doing in this realm. I think in partnership with our basic kind of disciple making and Christian leadership and pastoring that we want to do for people. So anyway,
yes,
she's
sir.
Got a lot, she's got tons of knowledge on it, and I look forward to re-listening to this interview.
Roll tape.
Roll tape. Go.
Dr. Heather Dave Duke Gingrich, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thank you.
You are here because you've written a most excellent book on a topic that has been getting a lot of airtime, but that we don't truly understand, I think, to the depths we need to, and that is trauma. The book is called Restoring the Shattered Self. And I'm wondering, before we get into that, would you just give yourself a brief introduction to our audience, who you are, what you spend your time doing?
Okay. I am a professor of counseling at Denver Seminary at the moment. I've been in the counseling field for about 35 years, which makes me feel really old, but I was the youngest in my graduating class. and really, complex trauma or survivors, adult survivors of abuse have been my area of specialty almost from the time I graduated in the 1980s with my master's program. Hmm. And just gradually over time, began to see more and more people with an abuse background. Also those with dissociative disorder, such as what used to be known as multiple personality disorder.
Okay.
So it's just kind of a specialty that God brought my way. I didn't seek it out, but it's people kept coming in and I had to figure out what to do.
So this is fascinating to me.
Wow.
In the early 80s, when you got your certification, you began exploring people from abuse backgrounds. Can you maybe just share briefly, how has the landscape of how we understand trauma changed from when you first started until now?
Oh, that's a good question. Really, when I started, there was very little talk about trauma. There was not even an elective course on trauma offered in my master's program. Actually, there still sometimes aren't courses in trauma offered. And there was very little offered if there was trauma. And even in years since then, it's often been PTSD. It's been war vets or natural disasters. People who were like counselors who were seeing people with an abuse background were kind of doing their own thing in their own world. And the people that were working with war vets and the people that were working with child abuse survivors weren't really in much contact. And so that has kind of impacted the trauma field quite a bit. And even now, part of what's happened is that there's more and more knowledge about PTSD, which is wonderful. But often the more complex trauma, the abuse histories, that's not really as well known even by professional counselors. So that's where my passion for my book came from. It's like I want as many counselors or pastors or lay leaders as possible to understand that there are differences in treatment. There are differences in how these people live their lives, and I really wanted to see them get help.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons we're so excited to have you here. So maybe just to set the table, you're using some words and phrases that I think in our vernacular are just used interchangeably. But if I had to guess, there's probably some sort of delineation between them. Words like PTSD and trauma. Could you just maybe set the table? Is there do you differentiate between those two labels? And what is, when you refer to trauma, what are you referring to?
Well, trauma can be the result of almost anything, because ultimately it's subjective in nature. You know, five people can go through exactly the same event. Two of them might have severe post-traumatic symptoms, and three of them might have very few. So that's very important to understand, is that research has shown that no matter what the event is that's potentially traumatic, not everyone is necessarily impacted by it in the same way. And there are all kinds of reasons for that, which we probably don't have time to go into, but it includes things like, you know, differences in biological makeup and personality, and whether there is social support or not. All kinds of factors go into how resilient someone is. But that is the reality, that an event that is beyond someone's ability to cope with it can potentially become traumatic, no matter how big or small that may seem to an outsider looking in. And so for anyone, you know, I think that's important for anyone in a helping role. When we kind of go in, it's really important to listen to the person, to understand what the impact has been on them, and not make assumptions about.
Yeah. So you can't tell from the event necessarily, like, how bad it was, or whether somebody should be responding one way or another. Like, it's really important to just listen and say, I need to believe this experience. This experience was their experience. Even if I went through this and I'm like, that doesn't sound that bad. Like, you know what I mean? You have to set the table like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah? You have to listen to what people are saying to you.
And that is key. Out of anything that we talk about today, I think that is the most important, is to recognize that everyone's experience is their own, and that we need to be willing to listen to what their experience is. And that's where sometimes, like for lay helpers, for example, often tend to want to share their own experiences as a result of showing compassion. Right. And there can be a place for that, but it can also be destructive, because the reality is that none of our experiences are exactly the same. And so that can actually, while offered to help kind of validate someone's experience, that might actually have the reverse effect with the person you're trying to support kind of going, yeah, but that's not what it's like for me. Whether or not they say that, you know, they may be thinking that.
Right. They want to be nice to you too, and they don't want to let you know that wasn't helpful.
Yeah. So we've all sat with friends who've gone through a difficult experience, something they're naming as difficult. So what then, as a person who wants to care for people in my life, whether as a pastor or a small group leader or just a friend, what's the difference between someone who's having a hard time processing a difficult experience and someone who has, like you say in the title of your book, a shattered self or is experienced trauma? What are some of the things that indicate to you that there's trauma involved, not just sadness or grief?
Yeah, good question. Well, there are specific post-traumatic symptoms that people will experience if an event has been traumatic for them. So the ones that are most often kind of talked about are intrusive symptoms or re-experiencing. So this is where, you know, flashbacks is kind of the lay term for that. And flashbacks can be either partial, you know, where someone's, you know, hearing, you know, an event that happened or kind of visualizing something again, or they can be like full flashbacks where the person suffering from it is losing a sense of current place and time and thinks they are back in that situation. Totally again. So we see that on media, on TV, and so on. You know, the guy, the vet who ends up jumping behind the dumpster when a car backfires and pulling out his gun.
Yeah.
Who actually thinks that he's, you know, back, you know, in the combat zone. So those intrusive symptoms can be in the form of flashbacks or nightmares at night where the trauma kind of gets replayed over and over again in some way or another. Then another aspect is hyperarousal, where the nervous system is just on edge. Part of that is hypervigilance, you know, where someone is always alert for danger. So it's like someone's going around in a high physiological arousal state. You know, they'll jump at any noise, or just it's like your nervous system is on edge. So that hyperarousal, and then so those are really key areas. You know, not everyone that is going through a grieving process experiences those kinds of post-traumatic symptoms, right? So they can experience sadness and, a lot of grief. They may experience, you know, some bad dreams or nightmares, but it may not be reenacting the trauma in the same way. And, another post-traumatic symptom is avoidance, trying to avoid any reminders of the trauma because someone doesn't want to be triggered. That can be conscious or unconscious.
Yes.
So those are real hallmarks of kind of PTSD in itself. Complex PTSD, which is what my book is about, also has other symptoms, because that trauma takes place usually in childhood, when, you know, children are still developing and growing their sense of self and identity and learning how to manage their feelings, just learning how to relate to people in the world. All of those things are impacted in ways that there's developmental kind of stunting that happens. Mm-hmm. That's going to be different than, say, a war vet who has no history of trauma or abuse in their background and has a trauma to deal with. That could be really difficult, but that trauma has happened to a person that has kind of a solid foundation of sense and identity, has had, you know, caring parents, knows how to relate to people and so on. Those two people are going to look very different.
Yes.
And that's something that is not well understood, even amongst counselors in the field, because people who've been through that kind of chronic relational trauma will have PTSD symptoms too. You know, you can check all the boxes for PTSD, but there's so much else that has to be worked with. So that's part of my passion, and in writing the book, is to kind of go, not all trauma is alike, and not all PTSD is alike. And it's important to recognize that there are differences.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you, so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
So it sounds like you're saying, like, the complex, a traumatic event, anybody can have a traumatic event, but it seems like this, I don't know, you haven't used this term, but simple trauma, if we're going to compare it to complex trauma, simple trauma is related to an event, like a vet goes to war, or, you know, something tragic, you know, it's kind of one event happens to somebody, and that's what we're dealing with. But it sounds like complex trauma happens when you start to notice that something, yes, maybe something recent happened to somebody, but it triggers all of these other, like, thematic or iconic sort of elements that go all the way back to childhood, where it's like, oh, this trauma is almost like a layer on top of more trauma. And the reason they experience this as traumatic is because, you know, of some previous trauma. Is that kind of what you're saying? Is that what complex trauma is? Or is that too simplistic?
That's part of it. And I should mention that there is research that shows that people who develop PTSD, say as a result of combat trauma or whatever, often actually have a history of complex trauma. So that makes them more susceptible.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes.
And that gets complicated in terms of of helping that person heal too, because if they go to the VA for help, they're going to focus on the PTSD. They may not even ask questions about complex trauma background. But the main difference is that complex PTSD or complex trauma is generally relational in nature, at the hands of another person. And generally at the hands of a person who is thought to be safe or who is supposed to keep that person safe. So, you know, if you think about cases of incest or physical abuse in the home, so parents or grandparents or an uncle or an older brother or a coach or a pastor or a youth pastor, you know, someone who's kind of in a position where the child is supposed to be protected, but isn't, that the trauma happens at the hands of that person. So you can see how that's quite different than a tornado hitting and destroying your home. While that can be devastating, there's not the same sense of betrayal at the hands of another. And all of these other things don't necessarily get impacted, like a sense of who you are and your ability to you know, to learn just how to manage life relationally and so on are not. I mean, some of those things can be impacted by a single event trauma. I mean, everything gets impacted, but it's not often the same kind of core issue. It doesn't impact kind of the core of the person. So that's where complex PTSD is quite different.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about a child.
That's really helpful. Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful. So, you know, we're recording this in the middle of coronavirus pandemic, which has been, in a sense, traumatic for people, right? That there's like, wow, there's lots of, you know, but that's a different, like, we sort of expect a virus to do what a virus does. You know what I mean? Like, we expect that. It's not like, oh man, coronavirus betrayed us.
Right.
No, that's what a virus does. It's sort of, you know, it's like an unthinking thing. It's like a tornado. It's like a, you know, but that's a very different kind of trauma than the, like you said, it strikes at the core of our identity, our belonging to other people. Like, what does it mean to be me? That's much more what you're talking about when you're talking about complex trauma, because it always has to do with relationships. That makes
now,
a lot of
sense. With respect to the virus, complex trauma survivors can be impacted in different ways. I mean, the statistics that are coming out, for example, are showing that because of staying at home and quarantining or isolation, then children who are already being abused have no escape from their perpetrators.
Yeah.
In the areas of intimate partner violence or spouse abuse.
Yeah.
That woman or that man doesn't have the normal escapes that they might have to be able to run someplace else because everyone is trying to keep their distance. So while the virus itself could have a different kind of trauma for many people, it does impact survivors of complex trauma in other ways.
Yes, because of the way that we have to respond to it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as you're sharing, I'm thinking of Ben and I are both pastors, and we talk and work with pastors, and a lot of them are being increasingly diagnosed with PTSD because of some of the hazards of the job. but then also, you know, if you're a pastor and you haven't encountered somebody who has experienced trauma, I don't know, maybe you need to get off your private island. Like, it feels like this is ubiquitous now in our culture. And so I wonder then what are some of the things I'm looking for a guide of what I can do as a pastor who maybe had a pastoral counseling class in college or somebody who's read a book or two about how to listen and set boundaries. But what can we do with somebody who maybe has trauma in their story? And then what is maybe something we can't do that a trained therapist or counselor needs to do?
Well, I mean, the relationship is what it's all about. Having a safe relationship where someone can feel heard. And what we talked about right at the beginning, just not making assumptions, allowing someone to tell their story is huge. Now, actual healing from complex trauma, especially if it's been like chronic abuse that spanned years or even decades, most pastors are not going to be able to do long-term counseling with someone like that. So one of the things they can do if their parishioner is open to it is make a good referral. And one way to make a good referral is to ask some questions of the counselor. Don't just assume that any Christian counselor necessarily is trained in trauma. And don't assume that anyone who's trained in trauma is trained in complex trauma. So if I were a pastor wanting to make a referral, I'd ask a referral source a few questions such as, I have someone that I'd like to refer to you. She was abused or he was abused as a child. What kind of training do you have in working with adult survivors of abuse or complex trauma? Yeah. Or what's the approach you take? And if they go, then it's probably not a good source. Yeah. If they talk about PTSD and they just talk about PTSD training, such, well, I do prolonged exposure therapy. Well, that's not good enough for complex trauma. Mm. And if they say they do EMDR, that could be really good training, but I would want to know what else they do. Because what I tell my students is EMDR can be a really helpful approach, but it's most helpful when it's in a fuller context of trauma treatment. It doesn't help everyone. And with certain people who have complex PTSD, it isn't even considered a good treatment technique without specialized training in advanced kind of courses. So I would ask maybe more questions than you might of a referral source. But then what you could do as a pastor or as a lay helper or whatever is be a support person. Some of that may be involved listening, but not necessarily to traumatic memories. But just for the person to know that they have kind of a place to land if they're panicking or they're having really difficult post-traumatic symptoms or they're having relational difficulties that you could kind of help them in some of the functioning, day-to-day functioning in life. What are some small goals that they can have? Who are some people maybe in the congregation that they've connected to? Or if they haven't, are there some people who are willing not to try to fix someone, but are willing to kind of be there, but also both for the pastor or for a lay helper, that they're able to set boundaries, that they're able to set boundaries and that they can clearly describe what those boundaries are. So in other words, I'm able to talk on the phone with you, but in the middle of the night, I'm not available. I need my sleep and whatever, but you can call this crisis hotline. I'm available for like a 10 minute phone call maybe at the time, but then I have kids running around. So I would have to arrange another time to talk, like just kind of setting parameters. Because people, when they're desperate, will take what you are willing to give them.
Yes.
But the danger is of burning out, right? And I've seen that happen where as a counselor, I've begged support people who've been involved with one of my counselees and said, I really love what you're doing. You're so important in this person's life, but I feel as though you're spending more time than someone can spend long term. So please protect yourself so that you don't burn out, and have the person say, oh no, God has called me to this. In fact, he's called me to even work with some other people. And literally within 3 months, they burned out and then totally cut this person out of their life.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's so destructive. So I think any support person, whether it's a pastor or a lay person that's just wanting to help, the best thing you can do is be thinking about what offer of support could you do long-term? Like think years, not days or weeks.
Yeah, that's good.
Or at least months. So that, because often people will assume, in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, they won't be in as much crisis anymore. Well, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think it's helpful. I mean, a lot of our training, a lot of the training that we do with leaders, it helps leaders recognize, like, why do I have this impulse in me? What, and, you know, for some, a lot of pastors, that impulse is, oh, I need to be there for this person, or I need to be, you know, and it's helpful to have some self-awareness so that we realize, oh, maybe some of that is coming from, maybe I've got a Messiah complex here. I think I need to be the one to save everybody, or, you know, that kind of a thing. But I think it's really helpful to hear you say, setting boundaries is not just about me protecting myself as a helper, as a pastor. It's about me loving someone long term. It's about me, like, honoring my limits so that I can actually love this person. Because if I burn out, I can't love them anymore like I want to. And so I have to honor my limits as a human. And so part of setting boundaries is actually love for neighbor, not just protection. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. And it is so true. And not only if someone burns out, not only does that particular parishioner suffer, but then often that pastor doesn't have anything left for anyone else either.
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of learned that the hard way as a counselor early on, where I really had allowed too many phone calls between sessions and so on. And I got caught in a cycle, and I cared for this person so much and felt as though as a Christian counselor, God, you know, would expect more of me. But then I realized after a while that if I burn out to the extent that I have to leave the profession, not only this person suffers, but not my other current clients and everyone else that I would potentially have seen in the future will also not have access to me. Right. And so that was a really hard lesson.
Well, maybe sharing from your own story then a bit, what are some of the ways, practices or commitments you've made to sort of foster resilience and self-care in the midst of dealing with really difficult, hard cases that could burn you out? What are some of the things that you do to remain resilient?
Well, self-care is really important, and that looks different for everyone. So the key is to find things that restore you, that renew you, that make you excited about life. So for me, one of those things is music. I sing in a couple of choirs, and it takes time. So sometimes my husband will say, you're exhausted, you know, from your week, and now you have, you know, 3 or 4 hours of practice rehearsal on a Sunday afternoon. Is it really worth it? And sometimes when I'm on my way to rehearsal, I'm thinking, I'm so tired. You know, why am I doing this? But it's like, as soon as I'm there and as soon as I start to sing, joy just floods my being. And I leave there ready to face the week, ready to face whatever comes. So for me, I've learned that while it takes time and energy to do this activity, it is necessary for me. It's part of what refreshes me. And another thing for me is being in the outdoors, going for walks, hikes, bikes. God speaks to me through nature. For other people, some women or men say that cooking is really relaxes them and they love it. You know, for me, that would not be my way of being refreshed. and having relationships having different relationships, having different friends. So I have some friends where primarily we have fun together. You know, we can talk about deep things, but that's not primarily why I get something out of the relationship. It's someone I can laugh with and just, play games or whatever, and not necessarily have deep conversations. Whereas I need other friends where I can have those deep conversations and feel supported emotionally. So it's really all about finding what is it that works for you, that refreshes you, and making sure that you take the time to do that, to not let it go. Because it's so tempting, right? When we're busy, especially people in ministry, there are so many calls on our time, but Jesus did that. He took time alone, sometimes with his disciples, sometimes just all by himself, no matter who was clamoring for his attention. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really good model to kind of go, well, if Jesus needed that, certainly we are going to.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I remember Dallas Willard saying, if Jesus needed 40 days in the desert, you know, to come before his ministry, I could maybe use two or three.
Exactly.
You know, at least, right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's so much to mine out here because this is such a huge issue in our culture, but also our learning is we're catching up, trying to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah.
I wonder maybe just as we wrap this up, you've got a section in your book on maybe the traditional Christian tools that we throw at problems. And I don't mean this pejoratively. I mean, there's spiritual warfare and there's prayer. Can you just maybe help us gain an imagination for how you think about what role does prayer play in the healing and resolving of trauma? And then what have you noticed? What does a counselor or therapist bring to trauma that you haven't seen happen maybe just in us praying for you?
Hey, there's a couple of questions there. Let me begin with just kind of the overall healing process for someone with complex PTSD.
Yeah.
Because then I think we could look at how do prayer or, you know, explicitly kind of spiritual interventions, whatever, fit into that. Something that is different than regular PTSD is that complex PTSD standard of care is phased treatment. So the first phase is safety and symptom stabilization. So that means feeling safe with a counselor, but I would also be in a pastor who's doing counseling, feeling safe with them or any lay helper. Mm-hmm. And this is really, and this can take a long, long time. And you have to remember that if someone has been hurt at the hands of someone that was supposed to be trustworthy, how does this person know that you're not going to hurt them? So part of it, for the counselor, I have things outlined in terms of how you help manage symptoms and so on. But the relational components of developing safety, I think, are important for anyone who wants to help support someone who is a survivor of complex trauma. And what this means is understanding that you represent a person because you are a person. And that just because you are safe and you're trying to help, it doesn't mean that this individual knows that you're safe. Or even if you're safe now, how you're not going to become unsafe later, because, you know, often abusers, perpetrators groom their victims for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of my clients have been in relationships with helpers who have been safe for even long periods of time and then end up doing something harmful. So I think that's important to recognize is that this person is not going to automatically trust you just because you know you're trustworthy and because you're a pastor or a leader or have been a friend for a long time. And so need to be patient and need to understand that this is a real thing. Then the next phase of healing is a trauma processing. And usually it's going to be a counselor who does that, unless you have, as a pastor, a lot of extra training, you're probably not going to go there. But I think understanding that this can be a very difficult triggering time can be helpful. Mm-hmm. And then the last phase is just kind of reconsolidating, the gains, kind of learning to live as a healthy, whole person. And okay, so now with that as kind of the umbrella of the healing process. So where does prayer, where does scripture, where does maybe, meditation or things fit into that? Well, I'd say that really depends on the individual because especially people who have complex PTSD will often usually have a lot of struggles in their relationship with God. Questions as to why did God allow this to happen to me? I was just this little kid and I prayed for God to stop it and he didn't. So, what can happen is well-meaning Christians and leaders can see that angst and, will quote scripture verses about God being there, about God caring, about God suffering, with us that are true and real. But sometimes a person isn't able to really accept that. So it feels a little bit like trying to put a Band-Aid on a wound that's hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
So what I recommend is that we pray for those people ourselves on our own time. We can ask them if they want prayer. And if they say yes, find out what they want prayer for. Because, for example, as a counselor, sometimes my clients want me to pray that they won't experience any more pain. Well, feeling the pain is part of the healing process. And so I'm not going to pray that for them. But I'll say, but I think, you're just getting in touch with your pain. And that's part of the healing. So would you be okay with me praying that God would be present in your pain or that you would have a sense of peace even in the midst of your pain and struggle?
Yes, yes.
If someone says, or give them permission. I mean, people are going to expect a pastor more to offer prayer than, I'm in a slightly different position as a counselor. But even then, the more permission you can give to say, hey, I'm going to pray for you on my own, and I can either pray here with you now or not. That's totally up to you, because, so that you actually don't just assume that this is what they want. Because at the time, if they are internally raging towards God, they may really not respond well to prayer or to scripture at that point. So I think that's part of recognizing that prayer is powerful and scripture is powerful, but also recognizing that this, it may be helpful at other times, directly with the person.
And it needs to integrate with this total kind of picture of how a person is walking through the healing process. It's not a magic bullet. It's not a cure all. It's not a magic spell. You know what I mean? Like, it has to make sense for the person's healing. And so I hear you saying, like, use some common sense, ask people if they want prayer. Don't assume, oh, I know what you need, and I'm going to pray this prayer. If I can just get you to pray this prayer, then it'll all be okay.
Right, because it won't. I mean, that's just not, I mean, there are times, of course, God can intervene in miraculous ways. And, but it's a little bit like people who are physically sick, that there are times that God intervenes in miraculous ways and heals people. But the usual way that God heals is through doctors and medicine and going through a process. And it seems to me that the usual way that God heals deep wounding like this involves other people as well, involves a process of time and certain things that happen. And I've had some clients say, after they've been through the process, I kind of understand why God didn't just kind of zap me and heal me right away in the way I wanted, because it would have been too much for me to take, to go from being a wounded, feeling like a victim with so many difficulties to all of a sudden have that gone. I wouldn't know how to be in the world. I wouldn't know how to, God knew that it needed to be more of a gradual process. And so I think that, that was an interesting comment. But I think that letting someone know that you are available, and if they have questions and they want to know what scripture has to say about certain things, if they want prayer directly with them, that of course you are, you're open to that, and that they can ask for that at any time. So it's really a matter of really kind of permission giving, that it's okay one way or the other for them to say yes or no, that you're going to care about them anyway and not think any less of them or think they're any less spiritual if they say, I'd rather decline today.
Yeah.
There's a great book, by the way, Diane Langberg wrote it, called, I got it. I'm like, oh darn, Suffering in the Heart of God. And it is a book specifically in looking at complex trauma survivors and the wrestling with God and the relationship with God and ways to respond to that. So I think that could be a really helpful book for leaders to read.
Good.
Great. Well, okay. We'll put that in the show notes, along with a link to your book, Restoring the Shattered Self, A Christian Counselor's Guide to Complex Trauma. Dr. Heather Dave Duke Gingrich, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.